Glenn, and you're listening to On the Air. You were listening very quietly there for a moment. I didn't turn the microphone up very high. Hey, we're going to have a good day today if the snow stops. It's awful cold out there. Be careful when you're out there because the snow, it's those big, huge, wet flakes that cause you to, and we're going to talk about that, by the way, in Swap Shop. You know, we don't have a whole lot of calls during the winter, and so we're going to, some of our trivia is going to be about snow, and I've learned a lot about snow. So anyway, that's what we're going to do today, this afternoon. But this morning, you know who we have? We have Fred Malone from the Marion Historical Society. Are you there?
I'm here.
Yes, I'm here. Yeah, and I was worried about you walking up our steps. It's getting a little slippery out
well,
there.
Well, I did a couple of pirouettes on the sidewalk.
I wish I had a picture.
I actually did one yesterday or day before in my driveway, too. And you, I didn't go down, but you always look around to see if the neighbors saw you.
Yeah.
Saw you.
Yeah, you wonder if the teenager in the room, in the house across the way is laughing
exactly,
their butts
yeah,
off.
Yeah, right, absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
It's no fun as you get older to fall. I've had, about four falls since I turned 50.
Yeah.
None of them were disastrous, but none of them were very comfortable either.
Well, and of course, people that listen to the show quite often know that I had a disastrous one a number of years ago when I fell off the ladder and landed on the driveway.
You did.
But my big issue right now, of course, I was supposed to have my knee replaced on the 17th of January, and the Monday before, well, two weeks before the scheduled date, I got a call from my surgeon's office, and Ohio Health has cut off all elective surgeries for the time being.
So, you can understand that.
Yeah, with the advance, you know, with COVID the way it is again. So I'm postponed. I have no idea when I'll be rescheduled. I'm hoping... Well, they said maybe 8 weeks, so I'm hoping maybe March or early April I can get this thing done.
Good.
And I want to be ready for hiking season again, you know. This has kind of slowed me down a little bit. And,
again,
you're always worried
season.
About falling this time of the year when you've got a bum knee to begin with.
Absolutely.
You know,
and
up
you, I watched you coming up the stairs. You're struggling with that bum knee.
Yeah, it is. It's beginning to...
Yeah.
To cause me issues walking. So, I mean, it's definitely time, and I was ready, but unfortunately, Mr. COVID came knocking at the door and kind of threw a monkey wrench in everything.
Well, as you know, and as I have mentioned on the air, which surprised me that I mentioned it on the air, because Scott and I were talking, I have to go in for some... checkup, and the checkup is not a good checkup.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I'm not looking forward to that, but they haven't canceled mine yet, but we'll find out.
Well, as long as it's not a surgical procedure, you're probably still okay.
Yeah.
And actually, my wife had surgery, it'd be 2 weeks tomorrow, actually, but this was done on her hand.
Oh.
But this was done at the Hand Center down in Columbus, and obviously they're not connected with the Ohio Health, so they make their own calls, and there's an independent agency. And hand surgery, although she was out for the procedure, not quite as invasive as a knee replacement, I can understand.
Well, I imagine if they do nothing but hand surgery, they don't really deal with COVID. So.
Probably not.
I mean,
no.
I'm sure they check you before
in. Absolutely. They had to go through all that primary stuff that they do. But and she's getting along well with that. We go back tomorrow to get the stitches out. So
one of these days, you're going to have to introduce me to your wife.
Absolutely. Well, if I could, you know, I can't get her to talk on the radio or anything like that. Maybe I'll drag her over here some morning.
Your wife and my wife ought to get together. My wife won't talk on the radio.
Well, here's the crazy thing about it, Glenn. My wife taught school for 30 years.
Yeah, you'd think she'd be wide open to talk.
And she is much better than she used to be. When I first met her, she wouldn't think about portraying a U.S. president's wife.
Mm-hmm.
But having been connected to me for the last 17 years, she's learned that you either swim or sink, and so she's done several characters for me over the years for
Fantastic.
The Historical Society, and getting a little used to it. She still won't wear a hoop skirt anymore. We did that once, and she's not going to wear a hoop skirt again.
That's not some sort of kinky thing, is it?
No, but that's a thing that you saw pre-Civil War, where their dresses stuck way out.
Sure. And, what is that called down in the South? The those Bella girls.
Yeah,
were,
right.
They
absolutely,
all wore those
yeah.
things. Yeah.
And there's a great story that goes along with that hoop skirt, but I'm not sure I can tell it.
Okay. But, well, you're the yeah. vice principal, vice chairman well, of the historical society. What's going on?
I was just elected Tuesday night at our historical society meeting. For this coming year, I'm now the vice chairman of the board. Mm-hmm. Which means that next year I will be taking over as chairman of the board. We used to call it president of the historic society. Now we call it chairman of the board.
Okay.
We did some rewrites on our
yeah, I know.
Board. Yeah, right. I can't think. This is the problem when you get old.
Your constitution, basically.
Yeah. Whatever. But we are moving into an era with this new capital campaign that we're kicking off right now that they wanted me to come back and kind of spearhead the organization while the capital campaign was going on.
Well, tell us
about
that.
Put a familiar face with
sure.
the whole thing. And you know, everyone knows I like to talk, so I'll be going around to a lot of the service groups and that type of thing throughout the next couple of years talking about what we're doing at the Historical Society. And so I'm very honored. I served previously as president, and I'm happy to do it again for the Historical Society, and I'll love doing it. You just wonder, though, you know, you get a little older and you start thinking, you know, you maybe aren't quite as valuable as you used to be, but
reality starts to set in.
Well, it does, and I still think that we need, and we're starting to get more younger people involved in the Historical
good.
Society. And unfortunately, it's not just the Marion County Historical Society. It's all groups of that nature. We have the mm-hmm. same problem with the Malabar Board. We have the same problem with the Mohawk Historical Society. The membership is aging.
Yeah.
If you look at the average age of our membership in the Historical Society today here in Marion County and Mohawk as well, and even Malabar, we're probably talking at least mid-60s.
Yeah.
We need to get more younger people involved.
I was, as you know, I was with the credit union, and we'd have an annual meeting, which was required, and every year it got older and older. To the last year that I was there, I would venture to say there were probably 20 kids there, but they were really grandkids. They
sure.
were grandpa and grandma having
sure.
dinner, and the rest of them were over 60.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, our annual dinner for the First National Bank in Sycamore is coming up in February, and it's the same issue there. You know,
yeah.
we have 300 shareholders, but when you go to the shareholders' dinner, if you look out on the crowd, most of them are now in their 70s.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
And it will change because in our particular case, we're an independent bank, and the shares of the bank just get passed down. Very seldom are there any for sale. So the faces will change, and the next generations will come along, and that part of it will be fine. But unfortunately, with historical groups, because they don't teach a lot of history in school these days.
No, they do not.
A lot of the kids don't get the type of an education that they need on history, especially local history, until they do get older and they
yeah.
take it upon themselves to learn the local
There's
history.
No excitement in school for
well,
history.
Well, there isn't. And, of course, one of the things that the Historical Society does is we do a lot of programs where we go to a lot of the elementary
mm-hmm.
schools and we put on historical-type programs based on local history. We do have the fourth and fifth graders every year come out to Lynn School. They get a tour of Lynn School. They learn what it was like to go to a one-room schoolhouse. The kids also come to the Harding Home and the Presidential Center and Historical Society for tours. So we do try to teach them at an early age about their history, but then it's also up to the adults and the older members in the community to keep that idea going. So,
do you ever take – I was absolutely – dumbfounded with how good your president's dinner was that I was invited to.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
But do you ever take those presidents out to the schools and just have them one-on-one?
Yes, we have done that.
I love
right,
that
yes,
idea.
Yes, we have done that.
Yeah.
George Washington actually goes quite a bit.
I bet he does.
Our George Washington, he yeah. goes quite a bit.
He sounds like the type of guy I'd like to go
He does. And our Ulysses Grant also does a lot of school programs. I've done some, but we have in one of our paid staff members, and we have a very small paid staff at the Marion County Historic Society, but one of our paid staff members is a part-time person that works 20 hours a week, and she is our education curator.
Good.
And that's basically what she does. Mm-hmm. She puts on programs with all the local schools and does a lot of the educational work for us. So,
do you do stuff at the library? I think I recall.
We have in the past, not recently, okay. But then again, the library has their
own programs going. And
so they
been
do
closed.
A wonderful job. Yeah, unfortunately,
yeah.
COVID has affected a lot of things.
Yeah.
But that is one of the things that we primarily want to do is education. And of course, that's why we do the dinner with the presidents, the lunch with the presidents, the first ladies luncheon that we do every year, because I've found that over the years that people learn more about history if you can put it in first person.
Absolutely.
And they don't have to read it in the book, because let's face it, book readers aren't as popular as they were when you and I were younger.
And those of us who have a little dyslexia can't read very well.
Right. There's always issues like that.
Yeah.
But the library here in Marion County does an excellent job in trying to promote reading, and they do a great job with it, and I'm glad that they do. But we have found that first-person history means a lot more and is a lot easier educational tool for the public.
Easier to remember.
Right. Absolutely, it is. When you can actually look into to a face of someone's portraying Ulysses Grant or George Washington or whoever the particular character might be, and have a conversation with them or listen to them talk about their life, either before the White House or in the White House or after, it sticks with you a lot of times.
Well, as you know, I sat next to Florence Harding at the dinner, and she was so good, I forgot who she was.
You asked, well, and that's our goal. That's one thing we teach our people that strive to become a presenter, a first-person historical presenter or reenactor. We don't call them basically character actors, because they are reenacting another life, and they are sticking to the actual history of that life. But that's the thing that we try to pound into their heads. Always stay in first person when you're at that table with those people. If you do have to go out of character to answer a particular question, because sometimes when you're seated at a table with people that are paying for that privilege, they also want to know who you are. They want to know what you do or what you did. So you oftentimes get pressured into breaking character, but if you do, make sure that, you know, say, I am going to step out of character to answer your question, but I don't like to do this normally.
Yeah.
Because we want to give you that first-person experience.
Yeah, of course.
We want you to feel like you're actually eating dinner with Florence Harding.
Having
Florence Harding tell you about what it was like to live with Warren Harding, what it was like to live in the White House.
She kept that close to the vest.
And some of those stories you're not going to hear. And that's one of the things we're going to talk a little bit about today, about the best little stories from the White House, a book that I just recently finished reading.
So how's the Capitol campaign going?
Well, that's what I want to really talk about.
Yeah.
Before we get into anything else, we are officially kicking off our big Capitol campaign at the Marion County Historical Society here in 2022. This is a process that's going to probably take place over the next year, year and a half, maybe 2 years. But we are trying to raise $1 million.
Yeah, wow.
And I want to kind of go through what we are actually trying to raise that money for. And we've got it broken down into different segments, and I want to go over each one of those. Before I get started on that, though, I do want to mention two people's names. I know Terry Klein's been trying to get a hold of me, and I apologize to him if he's listening. I will give him a call this afternoon, Terry, so don't worry, I'll get back to you. But we've had a lot going on with our family, with surgeries and so forth.
He's working on that poster program.
Yes, but anyway, I will get back with him. And also, I know we have a very faithful listener that's listening this morning, and actually got a phone call from her yesterday. I didn't get her message until late last night, but Phil Satcher, who is a very big supporter of the Marion County Senior Center, and has been a friend of my wife and I for a number of years, has some items that she wants me to pick up for the Historical Society.
Fantastic.
Phyllis, if you're listening, and I know you are, I'll give you a call this afternoon and make arrangements for that, but I'm very interested in picking those items up for the Historical Society. So to both of those people, you are on my list.
All right, tell
now,
us.
Now, what we are doing, we've broken this down into a couple of different things, and I'll talk about each one of them individually and what we estimate that we're going to need to perform what we want to do. But Obviously, our mission has always been collecting, preserving, and sharing the history of Marion County. And you always introduce me as from the Marion Historical Society, and I'm going to ask you in the future, always say Marion County Historical Society. And okay. The reason for that is a lot of people think that the Marion County Historical Society or the Marion Historical Society is just the city of Marion because we're located in the city of Marion.
Yeah.
But obviously, we collect, preserve, and share information for the entire county.
So it's the Marion County.
It is the Marion County Historical Society. And it takes in all the little villages and all the confines of Marion County. So that's mm-hmm. really, really important.
Yes. There are a lot of those out there.
And there are. Mm-hmm. And we work with all of those individual small communities and townships throughout the county.
So, and their history is as important as anybody's.
It's absolutely vital.
Right,
yeah. Because a lot of those little burgs were established before Marion became a county.
Well, wasn't the baseball, what's his name, the Native American baseball player that lived here in the area?
Oh, you're talking about Jim Thorpe.
Yeah. Wasn't he in one of those little burgs
part of the Oorang Indians, yeah. Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, moving on, our first category is roofing. Now, our building was built in 1910. It still has the original tile roof on it, which we won't change. We're destined to keep that tile roof because, again, we preserve history. That's what we do.
And it looks
so
right.
We're not going to rip off that tile roof and put an asphalt shingle roof on it. Absolutely not.
It wouldn't look right.
But as everyone knows, after 110 years, that roof is suffering some damage.
Yeah.
Now, the tile roof on that building is basically in pretty remarkable shape, considering that it was put on in 1910, and now it's 2022. So we're talking about 112 years that that roof's been on there. And we have replaced, over the years, we've replaced tiles. We were fortunate that when they built the building, there were additional tiles kept for the building.
Yeah.
And I think I've mentioned to you before that there is a third story to that building.
Yeah, you have.
And that's basically the attic story that you might want to say. But because the roof is pitched, it's when you go up into the third story, it's about a 20-foot peak from where you can walk around to the actual ceiling of the building. Hmm. The elevator shaft goes all the way up into the third floor, so eventually we would hope someday to run that elevator all the way up there because I have grand ideas, not part of this project, but I have grand ideas that someday I would like to see that third floor developed for archives because mm-hmm. we are running out of archive space in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But as far as the roof itself, here's the type of work we're looking at. To remove the tile roof and underlayment, new self-adhering underlayment put down, and then replace the tile and patch as required. Now, we do have some tile left, mm-hmm. and the original tile, but most of what we have left inside the building are either chipped, broken, or damaged. So we're not going to get a lot of replacement from the original tiles. However, there are companies that do reproduce the tiles, so we know that the tile is available. For instance, my home church, Our Lady of Consolation in Cary, had the tile roof, which is very similar to this roof, done several years ago, and there's a company out of Toledo that did the work, and they were able to match and replace the tile. So if we don't have enough tile on hand, we can get the tile. But, as you can imagine,
it's
quite expensive.
Yes. Oh, it's expensive.
Yes.
I'm sure.
To replace the tile roof on the church in Cary, if I remember, and this has been about five, maybe six, 7 years ago, that was a several million dollar project
do
that. So, and we're not talking about replacing the entire roof. We're talking about replacing the underlayment and then relaying the original tile roof on top of it.
So do they have to take the whole roof up while they're doing the underlayment?
They'll do it as a section, probably a section at a time.
Oh, okay.
So here's what they'll do. They'll tear off the remaining buildup or the membrane roof to the structural deck and install new rigid deck and then installation of a TPO membrane roof. Now, what TPO stands for, I have no idea, but that's roofing
language. It's probably dirty.
Then they'll repair and repoint or seal the parapet stone head joints that are on the building, clean all the drains. There is a skylight in that building.
Huh.
It was originally built in the building. But
is it covered over now?
It is, with the tile roof above. The skylight over the years has caused us some issues with leakage.
Sure.
So we want to actually eliminate that skylight, infill the opening, clean the interior skylight, and then add artificial light to the skylight. So if you're in the building looking up, you'll still see the skylight. But basically, it's going to be artificial light above it, and the rest of it would be gone.
So it'd be
so that we don't have that problem anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The estimated cost for everything that I just talked about is estimated $230,000. So that's the roofing part. This is a portion of the $900,000 to $1 million capital campaign fundraiser that we're now in the process of starting.
But it's not something you can really wait on, because it'll deteriorate your entire building if the water gets in there.
It will continue to get worse if it's not addressed.
Yeah.
And again, probably should have been addressed a number of years ago, but we managed to get by with patching tile that was replaced and doing some minor asphalt repairs on the roof over the years. The second phase is all HVAC related.
Mm-hmm.
That's your heating system.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. We have nine units. We have a boiler in the building, which basically takes care of the original structure itself that was built in 1910. In the 60s, there was an addition put on the back of the building. That one is all covered with heat pumps.
Mm-hmm.
And heat pumps are supplemental heat for the boilers for the basic built part of the building. There are nine of those heat pump units. They usually have a life of 10 to 15 years, 20 at the outside, with the exception of two that we replaced about 5 years ago. The other seven are well beyond their 20 years of life.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been repairing and trying to get by with what we had. So all of those basically have to be removed. They have to be replaced with new ones, with a more efficient system. We've got to do some reworking of duct work inside the building, and a lot of changes with electrical to handle what new heating system we use to replace all those heat pumps.
Mm-hmm.
Estimated cost for all that's about $235,000.
So you spent half of your
we're up
capital foundation.
We're up to half. Now, exterior work to the building. There's a lot of exterior work that needs to be done. I think we've done an excellent job over the years of keeping up the exterior of the building.
Yeah,
as you can imagine,
it looks nice.
A building built in 1910 is going to have some issues.
Yes,
it's stone,
yep.
And of course the addition that was put on in the early 60s needs some help. So here's some of the things that are going to be needed to be done there.
I just had a thought. It's hard to imagine, but Warren G. Harding walked by and looked at that
building. Oh, he did.
All the time, because he was only down the block.
Sure. Yeah, and it was a post office then.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm sure he walked to the post office and got his mail.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely.
All right. I'm sorry.
So anyway, replace the east side window well concrete. Repoint the east stone wall. Now, on the east side, that would be the side toward the old YMCA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the west side's a State Street side. Clean the east stone wall. Repair and repoint the east brick wall. That's on the new portion that was built. Repair and repoint the south wall. That would be back towards this direction.
Mm-hmm.
Clean the south wall. Repair and repoint the west wall. Clean the west wall. Clean, repair, and repoint the steps. Now, we did some partial work on our front steps about 10 years ago with the grant that we got through the county, but that was a minor repair.
What's wrong with the steps?
Well, they deteriorate. They're deteriorating.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem is water in the cracks or where the one step meets the other, the joint, over the years, that pulls apart, and water will seep down underneath there, and that deteriorates from the inside out.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, clean, repair, and repoint the steps. Clean all the area drains. There are a lot of drains around that building, and, of course, a lot of roof drains, too. The burr joint electrical repellent track all needs replaced. If you look at the top of the building, when they built the building, there's a system that, up there that keeps pigeons from going up there and roosting and leaving what they leave when they're roosting.
Huh.
That all needs to be, that's why they call it a bird jolt. actually, right now, it's more of a wire thing, but they'll actually put the way they do it now is there's a small electrical charge that runs through it.
So they don't
even land up there, right.
Yeah.
Right. Redo the paved parking areas around the building and install a new surveillance and security system.
Parking areas must be behind the building, right?
Behind and to the side.
Okay.
Right. There's some, there's some basically some staff parking and some handicap parkings on the
east side.
East side, which is actually, I just say, the old YMCA board side.
Right.
And that's where our ramp is for the handicapped entrances on that particular side of the building. So that needs to be done. Estimated cost on all that work, $230,000.
Wow, that's pretty expensive.
So we're up to right around $900,000.
Three quarters of it, yeah.
And so we say like an extra $100,000 to do some extra work, and that's interior-related work. That is to repair all the interior plaster. Over the years, we've had some issues with the drainage around the building, especially on the west side of the building. We had to actually dig all that west side up a few years ago. That was also done with a small grant from the county. We had some tile there that went nowhere, and so water was seeping down in there and then running into the building. So one of our rooms that is now, that we managed to do with some donated money a couple of years ago and with interior volunteer help, one of our archive rooms that we weren't able to use for a number of years, we did do some repair in there, so we're using that now. But all that work needs to be, it needs new plastering done in here.
Sure.
But there's still some bubbling up that has been there, not has not been repaired, is not leaking or anything now, but it needs repaired. Paint all the walls in the building. That hasn't been done for years. Paint the floor where needed. There is some flooring that is painted, especially in the new section. And then do a lot of miscellaneous electrical works, and that's about $85,000 to $90,000. So that brings us up to our $1 million.
Now, how do you schedule all that? Because are you going to have to shut down? And
well, that still, a lot of that still remains to be seen. Obviously, we probably won't have to do any shutdown for the exterior work.
Right.
We hope we can stay open for that. And if things go the way we plan, the work will be done in, like, in project areas. So we may just have to shut down one section of the museum at a time, because as we've talked about before, 2022 is going to be a big year for us too, because we're also going to be opening the Mary Ellen Withrow Museum in 2022. We're going to be opening the Woodland Elves portion of the museum in 2022, and the old Buckeye Telephone Museum will be opening in March of 2022 in Heritage Hall.
Do you need a few more projects?
We do. but there again, it's part of our mission to collect, preserve, and share the history of Marion County, because the Buckeye Telephone Museum, which used to be located out on Bell Fountain Avenue, that had very, 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 very limited hours, basically by appointment only, and didn't get a lot of viewing. So we were able to absorb that, plus they were losing volunteers. They didn't have anybody to take care of their museum anymore. So we were able to absorb that museum into ours. Mary Ellen, of course, is now, you know, 91 years old, 92, I think she is.
And
now
a Marion treasure.
And unable to continue to keep her museum out at Primrose, where it is now. And this will also give an opportunity for more people to view her museum.
Oh, I'm sure people
with the hours that we keep, you know, 5 days a week or 7 days a week that we're open during the summer hours. You know, more people are going to be able to take advantage of seeing that museum. And, of course, the Woodland Elves was in a private home. So that's going to be accessible to more people now.
When are you expecting the Woodland Elves to come in?
Well, actually, we have everything
you're
now.
There.
Yeah, in fact, if you would walk into Heritage Hall right now, you would think, oh, my word, a tornado hit this place. Because things are piled up everywhere, as you can well imagine. So
I got to get my wife down to see the elves.
The staff and the volunteers have a lot of work to do between now and the first weekend in March when actually going to be the third weekend in March when we open for weekends only to get everything ready.
Yeah.
The Buckeye Telephone Museum, will be going in where what used to be the military room in the Heritage Hall, which you are familiar with, but a lot of people that have been there will know where that was. The Mary Ellen Withrow Museum will be going downstairs on the lower level across from the Harding Rooms.
Good place,
In what used to be the archives office. We're going to completely devote that whole room to Mary Ellen. And then the Woodland Elves actually will be kind of an interactive type of museum that will be located throughout the entire Heritage Hall. So these little Woodland Elves will be conveniently placed in locations where kids will have to find them. So it's going to be kind of like a scavenger hunt for the kids to go on.
Where's Waldo?
When they come, right. You know, you got to find, and they'll be given a paper, and they'll have to find to locate all the Woodland Elves.
That sounds like fun.
And that was... Mrs. Sherry Williamson's books that she wrote about the Woodland Elves and her collection of the Woodland Elves. So There's a lot of stuff going to happen at the Marion County Historical Society this spring. And here's my pitch. We need your help. We need the help of the people in the community. And this capital campaign that we are kicking off actually this month, and we'll start to, of course, ramp up more as the summer comes along. You'll be seeing more and more about it. You'll be hearing more and more about it, hopefully on this radio station, and WMRN. We'll try to get on there as much as we can, and we'll be going around to service clubs. We'll be hitting all the corporations in town, but we need the public, the general public's help as well. And it's like I told my board, no donation is too small. No donation is too large. So, I mean, I'll take $10 and I'll take $10,000.
Mm-hmm. You know, how about $10 million?
I'll take that too. And I am in charge of not the whole capital campaign. No, Larry Babich is our campaign capital campaign chairman, and Larry's doing and has done already a wonderful job, but he has a committee. But my job is to get the word out to the general public and encourage people to participate in this once in a lifetime campaign to help save and preserve and protect and share the history of Marion County and where you live.
Now, I've been involved with capital campaigns before, and quite often you want to start your campaign on a high note that you already have X number of dollars in the bank.
Yes.
And I'm not asking you who or how much, but have you got some seed money going?
We do. We do, and we are working with our state representative here in our area, Tracy Richardson. We are working with her to get a chunk of the capital campaign or the capital fund money that the state of Ohio will be issuing for 2022.
Good.
We think we have a fairly good shot at getting a nice chunk of change.
Don't mention my name, okay?
Not the full amount, obviously,
yeah.
But we're hoping maybe if we can get 25% of what we need from the state
super,
through their
yeah.
capital fund, that will help tremendously.
How about the Marion Board?
Community Foundation?
Yeah,
yes,
Foundation.
We're working with them as
good.
Well. We've made inroads with them. We have also got a couple of new corporate sponsors already this year.
Excellent.
We're growing our membership. Since January the 1st, we have signed up 53 new members who have never been members of the Historical Society.
What does it cost to become a member?
Individual, I think, is $30 and $50 for a family, and then there are other levels. But like you and your wife could join for $50 a year, mm-hmm. and that helps us because that helps us to sustain our normal operating expenses. Our budget runs somewhere in the neighborhood of $150,000 to $160,000 a year.
Sure, you got to pay people.
And that's all money that we have to generate through fundraisers, through investments that we have, and through donations and through memberships. So that's a lot of money to raise every year.
I'll go home and talk to my wife
for that.
And
again, like I said, even a $10 donation to the capital campaign will help. So don't think if you're sitting at home listening about this, that, oh man, I can't give a donation to a capital campaign. Yeah, you can. $10 will go a long way to help us.
Sure.
It really will, because you know, if 1,000 people give $10,
yeah,
look what you got.
$10,000. Yeah.
You know, you got a lot of money. So all of that helps us. Want to just tell a little bit about the Historical Society. And
you
this
got 10
is probably
going
to give us get us up through our first hour here.
That's good.
Just so people know, because I don't often take the time to do this, and because I wanted to do this kickoff for the capital campaign today, I think it's important that people know some of the things that we do. The Marion County Historical Society was founded in 1969, so we just celebrated our 50th anniversary a couple of years ago. We had a big kickoff at the museum then. To nurture interest in the history of Marion County, Ohio, our mission, again, is to collect, preserve, and share Marion County history with everyone in the county. So never think, if you're a resident of LaRue or Caledonia or wherever it happened to be in the county, that you're not part of this.
Well, aren't you also affiliated with other historical societies around the area?
Absolutely. Yeah. We share information and we share help with the Delaware County Historical Society, with the Wyandotte County Historical Society, Seneca County Historical Society, all of those that are contiguous around us, because we're all small independent groups that are struggling to keep our doors open. So anything we can do for others, we do.
Yeah.
I've done things for Delaware County. I've portrayed characters down there. I've done things for Seneca County, Wyandotte County, Morrow County. I've done Morrow County as well. So, we do that.
Cool.
In 1989, the Society purchased Marion's old post office, the building we're in now. We renamed it Heritage Hall to celebrate the heritage of the county. The National Register building is now the Society's headquarters and museum and has been now for 53 years.
Is there still mail in there that hasn't been delivered?
No.
Okay. I was wondering. I had a check that got lost.
Yeah, well, I can't blame that one on us. Since 1989, Heritage Hall Museum has housed an extensive collection of memorabilia representing the citizens, industries, and ideals that helped a small town make its mark on the world. Annually, we have over 4,000 visitors to Heritage Hall, and that's pretty well standard. We usually get that amount of people. And I will say that when we talk about representing citizens, we represent people like Mary Ellen Withrow, 40th Treasurer of the United States, and President Warren Harding.
Mm-hmm.
And as you just mentioned earlier, President Harding walked by that building
all the time. Yeah, and walked in. Yeah.
We do offer educational programming and a lot of special events. Complete with costumed historical characters, who sometimes get hysterical, especially when I'm doing Groucho Marx. A Night at Heritage Hall flashlight tour is a big hit with both kids and adults alike. The evening tour of Heritage Hall has just marked its 15th year. And by the way, that is coming up on March the 26th. We'll be doing that again this year. Blast from the Past is an event that we do. It's a traveling youth education and outreach program held in conjunction with the Marion City Schools Summer Lunch Program. We educate over 500 youth a summer, allowing them to learn a lot about the history of Marion County. Our popular living history programs, such as Lunch with the Presidents, First Ladies Luncheon, and Dinner with the Presidents, bring to life past presidents and first ladies of the United States and allow guests to learn what it's like when they were in office and have an opportunity to sit with them, like Glenn did back in November when he sat with Lawrence Harding.
Yeah.
Thanks to several folks, local folks engaged with Marion County's history, we have many successful and award-winning publications that will leave a legacy for generations to come. Our gift shop in the Heritage Hall is a wealth of local authors' books on Marion County history. So if you're always looking for some special gift for somebody, a book written by a local author is a real plus.
Hmm. We have both historical things written by local authors as well as fiction written by local authors?
I think we do have a couple of fiction authors locally. One guy from Mansfield who was lived here in Marion for some time, lives in Mansfield now.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fiction writer, and so we have some of his books, yes.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right.
And some of it's historical fiction. There was a historical fiction book written about Harding sometime back. I can't remember the name of it now, but we still have books of that, and that was a local author that wrote that.
Cool.
We work closely with the Harding Home Presidential Site, the Huber Museum, and, of course, the Palace Theater, present hometown history tours to local schools. We also do that to bus groups that travel in town from other locations. We've had a lot of bus tours from Indiana, West Virginia, Kentucky, Michigan, Pennsylvania that have come from Ohio or come into Ohio, a lot of them doing presidential site tours, and they end up in Marion, too.
Yeah.
We're very excited to work with many of our visitors to help them plan additional stops in the community. We work with several of our local restaurants that can accommodate small tour groups or even provide box lunches to those people, and they can enjoy those in the auditorium at Heritage Hall before and after their
tour.
Oh,
yeah, I didn't know you had an auditorium.
Yes, we do.
That's
it's
cool.
It's not huge. I think the capacity is 75, but it handles most bus tours.
Sure.
We find that many visitors to Heritage Hall are spending several days here in the town, and they want to explore other local attractions in the downtown area, so we do our best to make those accommodations.
Well, the new Harding Museum, is that going to help you, do you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We've worked with them when they did tours of just the house.
Yeah, okay.
So, yes, we are definitely working with Sherry along those lines. And we've worked with Sherry over the years with our school tours, too. She does an excellent job in getting those lined up, and they go to the in the past they went to just the house, Heritage Hall, and out to Lynn School. But now, of course, they'll be doing the Presidential Center as well.
Yeah. Like, is that what it's called, the Presidential Center?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's what I call it.
Okay.
I think that's what they call it.
Okay.
Heritage Hall is also the home to the Wind Up Popcorn Museum.
Yeah.
Located under a colorful circus tent, it is the most extensive and impressive collection of popcorn wagons and peanut roasters in the United States. Actually, I will actually say that's in the world. These priceless wagons date back as far as the turn of the century and have been restored to their original condition.
Wow.
Thanks to George Brown. That was George's original collection that expanded. And it is sponsored by the Wyandotte Popcorn. I think they call it Wyandotte Snacks now. But the Brown family and Wyandotte Snacks, of course, still sponsor that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one of only two popcorn museums globally.
Where's the other one?
Up in Sylvania, Ohio, and it's a private museum.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, it's up in Sylvania, Ohio.
I'm surprised that my old hometown of Valparaiso doesn't have one, because that's where Orville spent a lot of his life.
It's quite possible that there might be a small collection there of maybe
I've never
Orville's
heard of
things,
it, yeah.
But we are the largest in the world.
Huh.
We claim to be the largest collection of restored popcorn antiques in the world, and we get a lot of tours and visitors from all over the world. I've actually escorted people from Japan, Germany, Australia. I didn't think where else. England.
Could you use some local help if they can translate?
Oh, we always can use local help.
Sure,
yeah, absolutely. We find that most of our out-of-country visitors do speak English.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
And on July the 21st of this past year, we did become the official home of the 40th Treasury of the United States Mary Ellen Withrow's Museum. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, it's not officially open yet,
right.
But we took in the collection on July 21st. And our plan right now is to have a soft opening for Night at Heritage Hall in
mm-hmm.
March,
yeah.
And then we're going to plan on maybe a grand opening in either late April or early May. So that's in the in the works.
I heard you and Scott talking about having the radio station cover your
soft
opening.
Yes, I plan to do that, and I've got some other plans that I'm not at liberty to talk about right now, but we want to make this a big deal. I obviously want to have Scott there and WWGH, who've been such a great supporter to the Marion County Historic Society. And to me, I can never thank you guys enough for having me on once a month. And, of course, this all started with Charlie.
Yeah.
Actually started when Charlie was still working with WDIF down on Church Street.
Was he an avid Historical Society?
Oh, Charlie was a past president of the Marion County Historical Society, and one of the instigators in buying Heritage Hall.
He was always an instigator.
If it wasn't for Charlie, Judge Charlton Myers and Trello Romine, we would have probably not purchased Heritage Hall when we did, because a lot of the members back then said, "Oh my gosh, what are you buying that big building for? You'll never fill it up." They started in a little house.
Yeah.
And now we have over 40,000 items in our archives and are bursting at the seams, and we need more room. That's why we need that third floor finished someday.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you need my wife and I to come down and visit.
We do.
Yes, I'm
going to
be there.
Like I said before,
in March.
No donation to this capital campaign is too small, and no donation is too large. You know, we'll take $10, we'll take $10,000, I'll even take $100,000 if you want
would
to.
Would you?
It to
okay,
me.
Yeah. Now, I will.
I will say this. That my board, and I've talked to my board is going to participate 100%, and I told him, I said, I don't take no for an answer, and it doesn't have to be big, but I want 100% participation in my board, because I want the community to know that the board members of the Marion County Historical Society are behind this 100%, and they will be.
That's excellent.
And I've already got commitments for, I will say I've gotten private commitments for as much as $15,000 from an individual.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Well, hey, we're getting down to our last 10 seconds, so we're going to have to take a break here, and we'll get back with talk about the Marion County Historical Society. Hang with us.
To WWGH Radio LP 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place, from broadcasting legends Charlie Evers and Mary Ann Michaels.
Alexander Hamilton is going off the $10 bill in 5 years, so long Alexander, and he is going to put a woman on mayor on 2020 on the $10 bill, and this summer they are going to poll people in the United States to see who should go on there, but it will be the first woman on the currency in like 120 years or something.
Well, the women that they've come up with wouldn't really make a bill very good looking. I mean, the women did a lot of good. I mean, don't get me wrong, but they're kind of...
Well, wait a second. What are you saying?
If they put somebody like Marilyn Monroe or...
Go ahead and say it. You don't want Eleanor Roosevelt's mug on the $10 bill.
Well, and Rosa Parks, and who else?
Won't they airbrush them before they put them on the bill?
I mean, can you imagine flipping out a bill and there's a... ugly face looking at you.
Now, wait a second.
Charlie.
Wait a second, Charlie.
Well, I think it's about time that a woman gets on some...
Yeah, if they put somebody good-looking on there.
Oh, dear.
Who? Somebody that is famous. Somebody
they have to be dead. What do you make of Trump, Charlie? You didn't jump in and did the wife thing there, but...
He's an egotistical jerk.
What do you really think about him?
But he knows enough to make millions. I guess we can't put him down for that.
We can't put him down.
Because we don't know how much he owes.
He would not have a chance, I'm sorry, at an office. I really, now he's got a lot of money that
money.
He can put behind him. But how many people would vote for him? I don't think very many.
WWGH Radio LP, Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. The Talking Place. Find us on Facebook by searching WWGH, Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM and clicking like for exclusive content.
Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
Hey everybody, this is Pastor Steve Whitaker from Community Christian Fellowship. I am the host of the Pastor's Spot here at the radio station. We are on live Friday mornings at 11:15. It is replayed Wednesday at 3 o'clock and also Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. Also, at 12:15 on Sunday mornings, we have the message from Community Christian Fellowship, and that plays live on Sunday morning at 12:15. Also, we'd like to let you know that we invite you and would love to have you come to the church. We are a Bible-teaching, Bible-believing church that is very, very much focused on outreach and reaching outside of the church and loving those around us. Our service times are at 10:30 on Sunday morning and Bible school hours at 9:30. We have midweek services, a lot of kids programs, and yeah, I just invite you to really come and get plugged in. We are at 209 East Water Street in Prospect, and our phone number there is 740-494-2222. If you call and leave me a message, I promise I'll get back with you. God bless everybody. Have a good day, and we'll hear you as you call in and have some questions for us on the radio, and invite you to do that all the time at 740-383-9944.
The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address
400 Delaware Avenue, phone number 740-387-9050. Programs on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are brought to you by Williams Grass Cutters. Telephone number 740-272-0062. Website williamsgrasscutters.com. Facebook page at Williams Grass Cutters. Email w.grasscutters@gmail.com.
Adam the Computer Guy is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio, providing on-site and remote-based technical support, computer troubleshooting, and network setup for homes and businesses. Website pctech.biz or adamthecomputerguy.com. Telephone number 740-531-2326. Also available, mobile notary services anywhere in Mid or Central Ohio.
We here at WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are proud to present Magnificent Marian Moments. Charlie Evers is a Marian Broadcasting original. He created long-standing traditions such as the Peanut Push and Buckeye Chuck. Evers Arena at the Marion County Fairgrounds is named after Charlie, after the arena had burned down and he used the airwaves to raise money to build a new arena. A highlight of his career came in the early 1980s when he found and restored Lady Justice and placed her back atop the Marion Courthouse after she had been missing for many years.
This is Margaret Hazlett, and you're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Welcome back.
This is Scott Spears looking down on the beautiful city of Marion from the WWGH News Chopper. If you would like to ever submit a news tip or an event to the WWGH News Department, email Scott at WWGH1071.com and watch out for the chopper. And now a few words from Scott Spears, Charlie Evers, and the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Scott, you know I love fruitcake so much that for me it's not just a Christmas dessert.
Oh, Charlie, I would not want it any time of the year.
Oh, Scott, you've not lived until you've had mashed potatoes and fruitcake, birthday fruitcake, graduation fruitcake, cream of fruitcake. And oh, the possibilities are endless.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Hello. If you listen and enjoy A Voice of a People with Linda Sims, help A Voice of a People to be better. A $10 donation a week pledge will support and sponsor A Voice of a People. In so by doing, you will have the privilege of your name, business, organization, church, or your favorite charity mentioned or announced during our broadcast and entered into a drawing which will be held weekly. Prizes will vary. I also want to say this, anonymous donators are welcome and will be respected. Remember, if you want to make A Voice of a People a better program, a $10 a week donation / pledge will support and sponsor A Voice of a People.
A Voice of a People with Linda Sims can be heard twice weekly on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Monday and Tuesday from 4:10 p.m. to 5 p.m.
Hello, neighbors. This is Pastor and Bible teacher Craig Heilman, inviting you to join me this Sunday and every Sunday from 11:10 a.m. to 12 noon for Study His Word Radio. And that's exactly what we do. We'll take a few moments, open up God's Word, and study it. We'll also spend some time talking about current events that relate to the church. We'll have some interviews with local people of faith. We'll answer your Bible questions, and we'll take your comments about our study. So please join me this Sunday, every Sunday, at 11:10 a.m. right here on WWGH 107.1.
It's now time for WWGH news. News about people, places, and plans. Live from the WWGH News Center. I'm Bill Macy.
This is Scott Spears in the WWGH News Center. The 2022 Marion Community Foundation Scholarship Program, the single largest source of college scholarships in the Marion area, is now open. Area high school seniors and college students can apply online between now and February 24th to be considered for the approximately $475,000 in available awards for the upcoming 2022-23 academic year. Marion Community Foundation donors have established more than 140 scholarship funds to support higher education for Marion County students. Selection criteria are unique for each scholarship award, but students can use one application to be considered for them all. The application requires supporting documentation such as letters of recommendation and financial details, so it is recommended that applicants begin as soon as possible. The scholarship application is available online at MarionCommunityFoundation.org. Additional information is available by calling 740-387-9704. Again, online, MarionCommunityFoundation.org, or by calling 740-387-9704. Parker W. Kynes of Huron joined Ohio's Save by the Belt Club recently after his safety belt saved him from sustaining life-threatening injuries. The crash occurred on U.S. 6 in Erie County on October the 6th. Ohio State Highway Patrol Lieutenant Brett W. Gockstetter, Sandusky Post Commander, presented him with a Save by the Belt certificate signed by Ohio Department of Public Safety Director Thomas J. Stickrath and Colonel Richard S. Fambro, Patrol Superintendent. Parker is a living testimony to the effectiveness of safety belts, Lieutenant Gockstetter said. Everyone needs to buckle up every trip, every time. Provisional data from 2020 shows 487 people in Ohio were killed in traffic crashes where a safety belt was available but not in use. For up-to-date statistics and information on seatbelts, log on to the patrol's seatbelt dashboard at seatbeltdashboard.ohio.gov. The Save by the Belt Club is a joint effort by the Ohio Department of Public Safety and more than 400 Ohio law enforcement agencies. This club is designed to recognize people who have benefited from their decision to wear safety belts. Parker also received a Save by the Belt license plate bracket.
Wintry conditions continue with slightly below normal temperatures for the next few days. From the WWGH Weather Center, mostly sunny to start out today and then some clouds moving in after the lunch hour. High of only 23. Not as windy as previous days. North winds up to 10 miles per hour. Mostly clear and very cold tonight. Low of 10. Partly cloudy, 22. For Friday. Friday night, look for a low around 8 with clear skies. Slightly warmer for Saturday, 29 and partly sunny, low 20s overnight. Looking at mid-20s and snow possible for Sunday, mid-30s for Monday, and then cooling down for Tuesday and Wednesday. The Talking Place.